Hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi,
Good
can you hear
morning.
me?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm using my wireless headset. I finally charged it up.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, does it sound okay?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, good. All right.
I don't notice a difference.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Well,
I'm
good
using
morning,
my.
everybody.
Good
I got
morning.
a wired headset.
You're all wired. You can't move very far.
That's a pretty good length. I
Yeah.
don't,
That's what
I
she
couldn't go to the
said.
bathroom, but
That's it.
good one.
It's good enough to get the job done, right?
That's right.
Yep.
How are you guys?
Good. Glad
Good.
you can make it. It sounds like you're in kitchen renovations or something.
Oh, well, they're coming. So they're going to do our whole front of the house, which is a kitchen and a dining room. Not that
Yeah.
they're going to do much with the dining room, but there's a wall in between. So they're going to knock down that wall, and then they're going to do all the stuff for the kitchen. They're going to paint and do
Some
the floor for the dining room. And so we're trying to figure out where to put all of these pieces of furniture during the
ah.
few weeks that they're going to start. They're not starting for a couple more weeks, but
At the
we've been
office.
procrastinating. Yeah, pretty much. So, but yeah, I'm excited to get it done, but it's like, in the
You want,
meantime, it's like, where do you put all this stuff?
right, you'll be happy when it's over and you can
Oh,
enjoy it.
I'll be so excited. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Knock down those walls so you could put more comic boxes. That's what I like.
I'll tell my wife.
Yeah.
That's what we're
Knock down the walls.
doing.
Turn
Did you
it
figure out
into a
anywhere to put the
warehouse.
kids? To put the
kids? I was thinking of getting a space heater for the garage.
And then to stick them in there.
Why
Yeah.
don't you just have them
Yeah.
run some vents over into the garage?
Oh, that's an even better idea.
Yeah.
Well, if it doesn't cost too much money, then maybe I'll do that.
There you go.
Yeah. The space heater's a lot cheaper,
It is.
though.
Is your daughter still dusting?
Not right now, but she has been dusting a lot today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she was heavily involved in getting some bookshelves out of the dining room and into this spare room here where I have my computer.
Oh,
She was
nice.
taking everything off the shelves, and then she was dusting the shelves, and yeah, so she was working hard.
I can hear somebody in the background.
Yeah, I think they just went over into the hallway as I was trying to close the door. They're baking now.
Why does
Whoops.
Daddy always close the door on us on Sundays?
Exactly. They're
What are they baking?
some sort of like pumpkin croissants or pumpkin like cinnamon rolls, I think. Something like that. Pumpkin something.
Well, for you to eat when you're done podcasting.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah, that's what Allie told me.
It's time for Daddy to podcast. Go make me some desserts.
Right.
I'm
So how are you guys doing?
doing good.
Yeah, Chris, you're doing well?
Yeah, I keep muting myself because I got the throat clearing going on right now.
Oh, you're sick?
No,
You're getting over with getting it.
just my usual
It's
like
just your normal snot.
pulse nasal drip.
Yeah.
I had something to eat before we started, so a lot of
It,
times
that,
after I
that, that
eat,
aggravates
it
it, doesn't
aggravates
it?
it, yeah.
Did, um,
Other than
what
that,
did
I'm
you have
doing
to
all right.
eat? What did you eat, Chris?
Something
A
with nut
couple.
cheese.
No,
What?
not cheese. Just
Oh, that doesn't sound.
a couple veggie sausages.
Oh.
It's a little
What
early for
is
that,
what?
but
What's a veggie sausage? Like a cucumber?
A bean.
not a vegetable sausage, a veggie sausage. In other words, no meat.
I know, I'm
It's
just
made
kidding.
with some kind of like bean or nut.
Oh.
Or Satan.
Soy, probably.
Soy, there you go.
That kind of stuff.
I mean, soy everything to try to make it taste like the reality.
Well, I think it's the consistency, right?
Sausages are pretty close because sausages are mostly spices and flavoring anyways.
Yeah. Those chicken patties aren't bad either. It tastes like chicken, I think. If it has a lot of flavoring on the top. Like the soy patty.
Yeah.
I can eat those.
My mom decided to just become a vegan. I don't know, a couple months ago. But she pronounces it she's a vegan.
Vegan.
So she's from Starfire's home planet?
Right. We're like, you're a what?
She's like,
I'm
can
a
you?
Vegan. She's like, do you mean a vegan? So, yeah.
Maybe a vegan means something different.
You don't
like,
have.
You can eat all vegetables, but you can have sausage or something like that. You can have bacon.
I don't know.
Maybe a vegan means you can have bacon.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to be a vegan then, so I could eat lots of bacon.
But that's it. That's all you could have is bacon.
Yeah, that would be a little tough. I mean, bacon's good, but you want other things besides bacon.
If you could only choose one meat, what would it be?
God. Man, that's a tough one.
You could choose a cow. You could choose.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're saying
chicken?
Like what animal that does it come from?
Cow, pork.
It definitely would not be a chicken.
A hog.
I would probably be okay with being pork.
Ah.
What about you?
Man, it's really tough between the pork and the cow. Man, it's tough.
Yeah.
I'd have to like think about it and maybe fast a couple days to decide.
See what you really want.
What you have the craving for.
See, I think I'd be good. Like you could have like pork sausage, you could have bacon, you could have pork chops, stuff like that, but you wouldn't be able to really have wouldn't be able to have a steak.
You couldn't have a burger. That's tough.
Really couldn't have a burger.
And that throws out the turkey, because that's one of the ones you would choose against, so you can't have a turkey burger.
No. I wonder what a pork burger would even taste like.
I don't know. We've had pork.
You could do pulled pork sandwiches.
Oh, so you could do pulled... Yeah, see?
Yeah, pulled pork, though, is not like... That's like barbecue to me. I don't know.
No, it is. It's totally not the same.
Oh, it's different.
But it's definitely
like
a good...
But it's stuff you can put in bread, yeah. But
sandwich, yeah.
It's not you can put, like, mustard and mayo and...
No, just...
And lettuce and tomato and, you know, regular burger fixings.
Yeah.
Right. And it'd be tough, man, because, bacon.
What about you, Chris?
I know barbecue pork.
One type of meat, what would you pick?
If I was going to start eating only one meat again, I would choose chicken.
You would choose chicken. Now, is that because you historically have liked the taste of chicken the best, or is it because it's healthier for you?
Actually, I think it's a combination of historically, chicken is probably my favorite.
Okay.
And like whether it's fried chicken or chicken breast or like when I eat meat, I used to, and I was single, a lot of times I would get the rotisserie chickens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also chicken wings. Like there's a bunch of different varieties.
Oh no, you had to mention wings. No.
So yeah, make the choice harder for you.
Yeah
I wasn't thinking about
and
that.
I also think like
tie. It's a three-way tie.
Chicken is more palatable to me. Like, I don't think I could see my... Like, if I started eating meat again, it probably would just be white meats, like chicken and pork. I don't know if I would go all the way back to, like, eating red meat and stuff, so... Turkey, but beef and steaks and stuff like that, I don't know if I would go that far. Well, who knows? I used to like steaks.
This is getting me depressed.
Well, you don't have to. No one's. It's just a thought experiment.
That's funny. Like, no one's forcing you.
Oh, we have.
He's just thinking about it, though.
Yeah, it's a tough question.
Mm-hmm.
Because I read my comics, I'm a mood eater. Like, I am a mood reader, and if you isolate that and you tell me I can only be in this box,
yeah,
it frustrates me.
But what do you do on Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving's always turkey.
Yeah, but what if you're not in the mood for turkey that day?
And New Mexico gravy. That's the important thing. New Mexico gravy on everything.
But what if you're not in the mood for turkey on Thanksgiving Day? You just go
through. You have it anyway.
Now?
You have it.
Yeah. Gotcha.
There's only really one thing I'm in the mood for Thanksgiving Day, and that's red chili on my mashed potatoes.
Mm.
That's it. And if a turkey's there, the turkey's there. I'll cover that in red chili, too. Nice. Some people prefer gravy. I prefer red chili.
Well, it sounds good to me.
Mm-mm-mm. But we have a few questions, so let's start with those.
Okay.
To get the neurons moving.
Yeah.
All right. So Joe Crawford says... What are some of the favorite black and white titles from the 80s? Do you think they should be revived? This is an interesting question, and I'll answer it. I never bought any black and white 80s comics. Because
I was just, when he said that, I was just trying to think if I had.
I might have bought some afterwards, but yeah. Man, I stood away from black and white forever. I mean, I think Walking Dead was the only ongoing I've ever did that was black and white. But besides a few of those slasher books that were independents back in the day. I think Faust wasn't color originally. I don't know. Maybe it was color. I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, if I'm talking the 80s, like, I would have been, you know, anywhere between, let's say, 8 years old to 18, and I don't think if I bought a black and white comic book, it was just a random like purchase that maybe was, you know, like in a, at that time, maybe a 10 cent or quarter comic book, like in a bin.
At that time I'd open it up, and if it wasn't color, I'd be disappointed.
Yeah. I'm kind of the same way. I think what you said, the first ongoing comic book that not only did I not mind that it was black and white, but honestly, like, even after all these years, I don't even, like, even notice that it's black and white, is Walking Dead. It's like, it just, I just take it for granted that that's, yeah,
well,
a black and white comic.
Was Ninja Turtles black and white? It was, wasn't it?
For a while, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
so
when it first started.
Yeah, you're right.
And then
you
had,
so,
like,
I did
radioactive black belt hamsters and all that other stuff.
Yeah, I wasn't into that one, but yeah, I did get Turtles for a while, from like issue 5 to like 17, but that was about it.
Oh, you got on early.
Yeah, 5 was the first issue that I bought.
You still have it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, 5, 6, 7, I missed 8, and then I had 9, and then I bought a few in the teens, but I think even my comic shop didn't get them reliably.
Chris, back. Do you have any black and whites from the 80s?
Those are the only ones that... Are we talking about ones that we remember from getting them back then?
No, I think it could include some
just in
that
general.
You've gotten just recently that you'd like, that you liked a lot, that you would revive.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of... Because I feel like I've dug into some of those on this podcast in the past, but... Ninja Turtles was the first thing I thought of, but I was the same way as far as back in the 80s. I also was sort of turned off by black and white. I was interested in the Ninja Turtles, but by the time I got into them, those issues were all really hard to find and expensive.
Yeah.
So it was sort of something I was aware of, but had no access to. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I hate to disappoint Joe.
I know there was a few. Malibu had an imprint. I can't remember what the imprint was. There was Ultraverse. There was the Malibu universe, which was like Dinosaurs for Hire and all that other stuff. And then there was one other one, and I got a few of those books. I can't remember if Miss Fury was one of them, but those were black and white. But I never stuck with them. Like, I would read a few, and then I never, God, I still don't navigate towards black and white unless something is image or something and comes out black and white. Even then, sometimes they're like red and white, you know, I mean, they're a couple tones of colors, if anything.
Yeah.
Walking Dead is it. For me.
Yeah, and that is, I mean, obviously, yes, it's black and white, but like when you think of the 80s black and white, I mean, with that newsprint, you know, it's basically like a newspaper, right? Just, yeah. And with no color at all. So, yeah.
Yeah. We disappointed you on this question, but at least we knew the most popular answer was Ninja Turtles. I don't have any Ninja Turtle books that were not Mirage, like late Mirage.
Oh, really?
I think after, yeah, like very late Mirage, like in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Mirage had a couple of titles, and Ninja Turtles was one of them. I didn't like talking animals, so I stayed away from it.
But at the time that I would have been like 12 years old, and there was this kid in school with me, and I don't know how he found out about it, but he was all into the Ninja Turtles like immediately, and so I looked it up at the comic shop, and you know they had some issues. So I mean, like I said, from number 5. So I bought for a while, but yeah, I don't know why I fell away from it. Like I don't have every issue, but I have between 5 and 19 a handful of issues, and then I don't have another issue from the first run.
There must have been something that drove you away.
Yeah.
Like to not come back.
Yeah, I don't know what it was.
Or something better. Because funds were limited or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely could have been part of it, is that, you know, being a kid, you just pick, you know, a handful that you can afford to buy. And if you have one that's totally not connected to anything else, like, you know, a bigger universe for Marvel or DC, then sometimes those are the ones that you kind of drop off from when you can't afford them.
All right. Dallow Spicer says, thoughts on DC bringing back Watchmen?
I think I have mixed feelings, I think.
Because Before Watchmen was awesome. Like, I loved Before Watchmen. So I'm pretty excited because I'm not the biggest Watchmen fan. I appreciate it. I like it. I don't think it's the best. I actually like Before Watchmen more than I did Watchmen.
Did you?
Yeah.
I didn't read Before Watchmen.
Why?
I don't know. I just wasn't interested when they had announced it.
No, but
now,
is it because of you're an Alan Moore purist, or?
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good point. Here's what I thought at the time, and here's how I feel about bringing them back. At the time, I thought it's just going to be and obviously, you know, a lot of people are saying how much they liked it. It's not just you that really says that they did a good job with it. At the time, I thought it was just a cash grab from DC trying to bring something, you know, back that people, you know, hold in high regard. They basically were just that it would be subpar, but they just want to get some, you know, get people to buy it, get some money out of it. So I didn't pick it up at the time, and I've never gone back to it. How I feel about them bringing Watchmen back now, I absolutely think it's fascinating. I love the idea that that's kind of what's behind New 52 /Rebirth. I think that it was a really interesting idea. People that, you know, absolutely love the original material. That material is there. Nothing's happening to it. You can still enjoy that original material, regardless of what they're doing now with Rebirth. So I know that some people just feel very strongly like some things shouldn't be touched again, but I think that in the past I might have felt that way, but now I feel like I'm a little bit more open about it, and I just feel like they're, you know, why, if they have a good story to tell, then why not? It doesn't affect in any way the original material.
Right. So if you feel like that original material is amazing, it doesn't hurt their enjoyment, still there. Right? It doesn't hurt.
I don't know why
enjoyment.
It would. Yeah. That's my point. Is like, how would that make you rereading Watchmen less enjoyable for you?
Why would it make you angry even? Like, I don't even understand that. I don't get it.
So that's where I am now.
But that's me. So let's go to Chris. Let's complete your thoughts there.
I'm kind of indifferent, I guess. I sort of, like, I don't necessarily feel... I can see where the whole Alan Moore thing is coming from. I understand the perspective is kind of... They feel like DC isn't honoring the spirit of the agreement. They have the contractual ability to do so. So even though they know that the creator, it's like against one of the creator's wishes, they're going on with it. But I also think it's kind of naive. I guess I'm cynical in such a fashion that I think it's sort of naive to not think a large corporation like DC is going to do something further with the characters if they're popular.
Mm-hmm.
I would never expect a company as big as DC to make a move like that. I think it would be kind of cool if they did, but kind of like Rob, I was skeptical of before Watchmen. But I didn't end up picking up the one that Darwin Cook and Amanda Connor did, just because I liked those creators so much. And I thought that was the most interesting to me. I was kind of won over by a lot of the creators that were involved and their willingness to participate in it. But I think that the stuff going on now sounds interesting. I think it sounds more interesting than before Watchmen conceptually. I think it'll come off well just because I think Geoff Johns is a smart writer and deals well with honoring continuity and different characters. I think it'll end up being fair to the Watchmen characters. I mean, I say I'm somewhat indifferent because I'm not reading it or any new comics, so I don't really care what they do. But I think it'll come off pretty well. And ultimately, like, you know, there's better things to be upset about. Like, just don't read it if you don't want to.
Well, you have a good. I mean. Some of the stuff you said was interesting, because I think that is part of it, is that people get, you know, angry that, you know, he wrote Watchmen. He's been vocally against redoing stuff for Watchmen. But I mean, if they wouldn't touch anything after like the original creators were done with it, they wouldn't have anything to publish. And, you know, we see that, Mike, we see that on the Valiant side with Harbinger, with Joshua Dysart, with so many fans bitching and complaining that somebody else is writing Harbinger. You know what I mean? So that's interesting that it's not exactly the same thing, but...
I look at it a lot differently because I know where these characters came from. They're the Charlton characters. So,
yeah.
I mean, if things could have gone differently if DC said... We have these properties. We just had Crisis. We can do this with the Charlton characters, but they didn't. They chose not to. They had a different direction for what they wanted to do with the Charlton characters.
Mm-hmm.
So they have their Watchmen characters that map directly to the Charlton characters. So, I mean, you can look at it different ways. Like, the ideas behind those characters were all were all taken. Just they were taken to a bigger level that hasn't been experienced in comics at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a good point, Mike. Whereas I can see it from that other point of view that I expressed, I also think that Alan Moore is kind of a hypocrite, and also seems he gives me the impression of
he's an having elitist. I think he's
an elitist. He's yeah, a high opinion of himself, and I have a high opinion of him and his writing ability. I mean, I think a lot of what I've read of his is fascinating, and his Swamp Thing run is fantastic. So I think he's very talented, but I don't respect that elitist attitude. And like you said, these aren't characters that were born out of whole cloth. And these are substitutes for the Charlton characters. So if what he originally wanted to do was to use the Charlton characters, so even more so that his original intentions would have made the fact that they were not his original creations even more clear. And, you know, he's done the same thing with in other areas, like with League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. That's a whole property based off of other people's characters. It's just that they are all public domain characters, so he doesn't have to have the permission of the people who created
right.
them.
But it's just interesting he doesn't want to, like, cash in on it, because they've offered him stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, and when the movie came out, they offered him stuff. And then he's probably going to not be well-to-do, but he could be.
Yeah, and that's his prerogative.
He could be getting stuff from Swamp Thing, too. Swamp Thing's another character where people could say, well, I don't want to read anything anymore because Swamp Thing was my Alan Moore Swamp Thing, but he was around before that, so yeah, he's taken some stuff and made them great, and then he's done his All American Comics line, like with Tom Strong. But he's kind of like a Doc Savage knockoff.
Right.
These ideas came from stuff that happened before. So yep. Yeah, he's good, and I appreciate his work. But I'd like to see more on these characters because they're fascinating. And, I mean, just the creators alone that they had in before Watchmen are, God, they're so good. I mean, they exceeded my expectations. So having them here is interesting. But I really wish they would have them more in the forefront. Like, I wish that the latest Action Comic arc was more Watchmen-esque than something I just saw in Supergirl. So, yeah. But, yeah, that was a good question. And I think we all have different opinions, but I think we're open to it.
I'm definitely very open to it. Looking forward to Doomsday Clock.
Martin Ferretti, Nerdy Legion, says, what character from the Golden or Silver Age would you guys like to see come back? I'll take it first because it's easy for me. Because I'm reading a lot of, like, noir stuff. I would love to see Wesley Dodds come back, like in a Sandman book. Because that stuff was awesome.
Now, would you want him to come back in that type of a...
Yes.
Like, in a period story, do you want to see him in the current continuity?
I want to see him in a period piece.
Okay.
It could have references to characters from that time period, but I want it to be a period piece. I don't want him to be in the current continuity.
Gotcha. Okay.
We have Sandy for that and other stuff he could do.
Yeah.
But I'd rather have Wesley Dodds and like a hard case crime book, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the relationship he had with God, what is her name? I can't remember her name now.
Diane,
yeah, it was awesome. And they tend to do that with those pulp characters. They tend to, like the Shadow, you know, he had his own, and the Phantom and all those characters have their love interests, but it's really interesting. So
Yeah.
what do you guys got?
Chris, what do you have?
Dr. Midnight would be mine, although Wesley Dodds would be in my top five for sure. But Dr. Midnight, I guess it's cheating a little bit because I'd prefer the Peter Cross version, which is not the Golden or Silver Age version. But I'd be happy with Charles McNider as well. Either, I mean, they were pretty similar to each other. So one of those two, he's one of my favorite characters, and I'd be happy to see him, you know, in the current continuity as a part of a Justice Society return, which I think they'll get to eventually.
Along
with the Legion, you know, they're waiting for the right time, which is fine.
I think the right time is going to happen soon, especially with the rumors of Hickman and Bendis, I think. Like, to me, Hickman would do wonders with the Legion of Superheroes. Bendis, for me, I prefer in more of a solo.
I do not want to see Bendis writing a team book.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Bendis's strength is when he does like Spider-Man, Daredevil, Alias, you know.
Yep.
Like,
Daredevil was fantastic.
When he focuses on a solo character, like even Iron Man, I think Iron Man's remarkable. I think he's more. It makes it harder when he's like got like more tools in the toolbox. So his strengths would play more to some of the solo characters, whereas Hickman thinks big. The more I read Hickman, the more I think Kirby kind of wrote like Hickman, because he kind of wrote like so big and plot driven things than actually drilling down on in the character. But I think we're probably about 6 months to 8 months away from seeing either a JSA or a Legion book.
Well, I'm really happy that they've... I feel like DC's been really smart in what they've done since Rebirth in terms of not throwing everything out there at once. And like you said, kind of waiting for the right time for some of these things. I mean, they could have easily just put, you know, Legion right out with, you know, the other Rebirth. And, you know, probably there would have been too much other stuff going on. So I'm excited kind of what, you know, what their long-term game plan is.
Yeah, Hickman seems like a natural fit for Legion.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I think for my favorite, probably... keeping in the same vein as you guys, probably Jay Garrick. I absolutely loved, you know, having him in like the Flash titles. When Wally was the Flash, he's one of my favorites, on the Justice Society. So yeah. And I mean, I absolutely loved seeing that, you know, he had that little cameo appearance in the Button. And a couple of the other times before that where they just like gave like a little hint of like, you know, they showed his helmet or something like that. It just like, yes, I want to see him back.
I would love like a World War II type anthology where you could like focus on like the people that are overseas, like Sergeant Rock and the Haunted Tank and the Unknown Soldier, all those properties. They're actually fighting the battle, and then all your powerful heroes are back at home except for the ones that don't have powers because the Spear of Destiny. I think it would be like fascinating to like play on that as like a mini series or something.
Oh, that would be awesome. Like a year long, like a 12 issue series.
Just a 12 issue thing like they did with Commandy, except you can play with any of those World War II characters in the World War II time period. I would go gaga over that.
Oh my god, that would be fantastic. Well, maybe when they bring Justice Society back and they, you know, explain why, you know, what happened to them after World War II, they could tell a story like that or something.
I understand why they don't. Like, because I don't think there's a lot of demand for it, but for the older people, I think that loved war comics back in the day, because every time they try to bring a war property, they try to make it current, and it doesn't work as well.
There's never been a time in history where a war was so. I don't want to make it too simplistic, but it was as black as white as war can be in terms of who are the good guys and who are the bad guys, right? In World War II. So, you know, any of the other ones, it's kind of muddy. And it doesn't – I think that's why the World War II works so well when they do that in comics.
Even in film.
Oh, yeah. Just in media in general, you're right, because it's just such a compelling story. And how different the world could have turned out.
Yeah. Oh, man. Sergeant Rock. I want to change my answer.
Well, doesn't that give you a good segue into another question we had?
Yes, I saw that question.
Oh, yes. Yes, there is. Let's jump to that one first before we... That was from Ross.
Yeah.
Mashad, if I pronounced that right. And...
Just remember it rhymes with...
Do you remember it? I remember... I remember it, but I can't remember the exact wording that he had. I wanted to capture it.
I don't know the exact wording either, but I think it was just the top three war comic characters.
We're all going to have the same answers.
For me, it's the same answer I just mentioned. Sergeant Rock, G.I. Combat, Unknown Soldier, in that order.
What about you, Rob?
Okay, well, I will tell you, my favorite is Sergeant Rock. My second favorite is Unknown Soldier. And if you're just talking characters, just thinking. I liked the, what do you call them? In the World War Tales, that team of...
Creature Commandos?
The Creature Commandos as a team, yeah. The Creature
Commandos. That's a good call.
Yeah,
it's kind of tough for me. I haven't read a ton of war comics. My mind actually goes to Nick Fury, even though my familiarity with him is more as S.H.I.E.L.D. Nick Fury. Mm-hmm. But still, it's a most prominent character for me that's connected to war comics with the Howling Commandos and stuff like that, because I didn't really read much war comics at all when I was a kid, but I was aware of Nick Fury because I was really into the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. By the time you started probably reading comics, they were probably
nothing
either
on
their way out or
they weren't around anyways. Right? Yeah. The only war related comic that I did come across a couple issues of was Nam.
Yeah, of course.
That was still around. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, even I think Sergeant Rock lasted the longest. I think that was gone by 86.
So. Yeah, they were all dwindling down to nothing, like right after post-crisis.
Right, yeah.
DC, that is. But, yeah, I mean, because besides Nick Fury, it's just characters that I'm aware of, like Sergeant Rock. I like his brief appearance, speaking of Crisis on Infinite Earths. I like him and Easy Company's brief appearance there, and kind of like wherever Kirby intersects with war comics, the Losers, is kind of where I have the most appreciation for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good.
Did you read Kirby's Losers? Like all of them, or did...
I have that like thin hardcover.
Yeah. So I haven't finished them all, but they're interesting to me. Mm-hmm. I tend to be more character driven when it comes to war. Like, what was the movie that we just saw, Barb? That came out that was more plot driven. The one that took place in Britain?
Dunkirk.
So, like, If you show me like a movie like Saving Private Ryan, who's it's very character driven, or the one that Hacksaw Ridge, not, was it Hacksaw Ridge? The one that they had to go over the ridge. If you
Jim
see that,
Hapsock, Jim Duggan.
He was the star.
if you have movies like that are focused on like individuals or the characters that are around them, I like navigate towards. But when we had like Dunkirk, it's like a scenic view of like real-time war. I don't bond with it as much, or like get like real emotional. Like I thought Dunkirk was pretty amazing, but for me, when Kirby does the losers, it's very much like Dunkirk. It's like all situation based. It's like they're thrown in, and you never really get to know the characters. A matter of fact, I think one of their best uses was when they were comics with like around 30, 35 cents when the losers were around, and the Crisis one shot, and then when they were again written again in New Frontier by Darwin Cook, it like captured the emotion of Gunner and Sarge and like what they really are. And when Kirby does it, I mean, he does a fantastic job of drawing it and stuff like that, but you never get into the depth of who these characters really are. It's more situational based, and he tends to do that. I mean, like even with the New Gods and stuff like that, it's based on this big iconic plan.
Yeah.
Yep.
True.
Do you have another one, Chris? You had the losers, and you had Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos.
No, I mean, I guess just Sergeant Rock. Like I
Yeah.
said, for me, it kind of just comes down to characters I'm aware of, but I haven't read a ton of War comics, so.
See, when I was a kid, I'm like 6 or 7 and 8. War comics were like the biggest thing. Like it was the biggest thing, and I think it was because the things that we played with at the time were like army guns and stuff, and you know, with caps in them and stuff, and we played with army men. Like that was our action figures, is having these army men. The kind of like the army men that you see in Toy Story, you know, those plastic figurines. That was like a
Yeah.
big deal.
Oh yeah.
A matter of fact, one of my favorite early toys that I got for Christmas, which I still have in the basement, is this mountainside Nazi mountain that has huge guns coming out of it, and they look like Death Star cannons that are coming out of each layer. And it came with a bunch of Nazi soldiers and American soldiers, and the goal was we'd always play with it, so the Americans were always, you know, attacking the mountain. But it was a big deal. Like we traded so many Sergeant Rocks and GI Combats, and that we read a lot of stories just in our neighborhood. Like that was the fad. That was the thing. That was like our X-Men. So I never even knew Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos existed for whatever reason. Like I think it's because he was more like Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. by the time I saw him, you know, with the patch, and he was more like Steranko-ish type than he was in the earlier comics.
Yeah.
And like I knew like Bulldozer, Ice Cream Soldier, Sure Shot, all those guys, Short, I knew them all. But like if you told me to name like the, I know Dum Dum Dugan, and was it Frenchie, I think, was one of them. I can't remember, but I didn't know him as well. I couldn't name the Howling Commandos for you. I still can't.
I think reading some of those ones, like when he was in S.H.I.E.L.D., of course you knew Dum Dum Dugan because he was there too. But then there was the other guy, Gabe, I think his name was.
Yeah, I remember Gabe.
Yeah,
Yeah.
because he was around in S.H.I.E.L.D. as well.
Yeah. How did
Dum
he
Dum, I remember
survive?
because of his bowler hat.
Yeah.
And his prominent mustache.
Yeah.
It's pretty iconic.
Yeah.
He actually looked more iconic than Nick Fury did, in my opinion.
I know, he kind of did.
Because you usually see all of them on the covers. You usually see Dum Dum on the cover just as much as you see Nick Fury.
Yeah.
All right, so I think that was the last question. Unless I missed something.
I don't know, did you say you were jumping ahead to that question?
Oh, there's one more question. Curtis Hempler, who I don't believe I've talked to before on Twitter, says, have you a favorite Hulk artist and a favorite JSA character?
Well, I already said my favorite JSA character.
Jay Garrick?
Yeah.
Yeah, so did I. It would be Dr. Midnight, and then probably Jay Garrick as a close second. Sandman, Wesley Dodds up there too, actually.
I like Courtney Whitmore too, believe it or not.
Man, I don't know.
I don't believe it.
You don't believe it?
It's so tough.
I think you're lying.
It's really the truth.
I think your daughter is telling you to say that. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, she's
Star,
cool.
Stargirl rocks.
I believe you. I like Stargirl.
I guess I'll go with Wesley Dodds. Sandman.
Well, you don't have to.
It's hard for me, like, because they have such a good and broad lineup. It's either him or Hawkman. Hawkman was, you know, the leader for a while.
What about Ma Hunkel?
Red Tornado. She was pretty cool. She was in that first issue. She ripped her pants off, I think. In the first gathering of the team, she tore her pants.
That's what I always do that when I join a superhero team.
You tear your pants.
Oh, I don't even need that as an excuse.
The Hulk artist.
I don't think I have one.
What are some Hulk artists?
Yeah, I don't think I know enough to.
I can think of writers, but.
I would say Incredible Hulk. Like when I see an image of the Hulk, I would say, well, you have Jack Kirby, Herb Trimp. He's a big one.
Yeah, I did think of Herb Trimp.
Sal Buscema, that's kind of my Hulk. That's who I would pick. A lot of Sal Buscema. John Byrne did some. Todd McFarlane.
Yeah. I don't think of either of them as.
Dale Quinone, the guy who did Hulk. The Pit. He came close.
Yeah. He
came around right after McFarlane, kind of, and then went over to Image.
Yeah, that's right.
Gary Frank, Angel Medina, Mike Diodato Jr., Adam Kubert. Paul Pelletier, Greg Land. I mean, there's a lot of them.
I mean, I probably, if I had and this wasn't me paying attention at the time, but just now that we're discussing it, I probably would say Sal Buscema, just like you, but that's just because he was drawing so many of them, you know, back when I was buying the occasional issue as a kid. I've never really stuck with Hulk for like long periods of time.
Yeah, me neither.
I'd go with Sal, but Herb is awesome. Like his covers are some of the best.
It seems like Ed McGuinness is also associated with them.
Yeah, I think that came with Hulk.
Yeah.
The Red Hulk.
Right. I think, like, looking... I'm also someone who hasn't... followed Hulk a lot over the years, but just looking over the art, I would also say Sal Buscema. Just his to me looks the most iconic, and like I like a balance where like the Hulk looks massive but not just insanely huge.
Mm-hmm.
And Sal Buscema's Hulk like definitely looks larger and more muscular than an average human being, but he's not as just like balloony massive as a lot of the other artists draw him later on, especially. So like it has a nice like 70s style to it.
He did like, I can't name an artist that did a longer run of the Hulk. I can't. Because Herb was right before he took over. I want to buy all the Herb Trimpy issues, that's for sure. Savage Dragon did like a homage cover to one of the Hulks, and it's freaking amazing. I'm so glad I picked it up. It was
now, if you had asked Trimpy. If you had asked about a Hulk writer, that I could say quicker.
Let me guess what it would be for you, Peter David.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, he was during the longest period of time that I did buy Hulk, he was writing it.
Yeah, I'd have to say Peter David too, just because of the sheer quantity of it.
Yeah.
But you had Len Wein too, Roy Thomas. I mean, there's some good ones. Bill Matlow. All right. Well, I think we answered all the questions.
Did you guys read any of the Bruce Jones Hulk?
I liked it. That's where the
I loved it.
That's the thing that like people like really knock that, but it was really awesome. They used it for the second Hulk movie, sort of.
Oh my God!
Mr. Blue and the
Mr. Blue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was out of Hulk for a while at that point, I heard about it, and this was one of those cases where I was actually hearing enough like good things about it that I didn't go back and buy the back issues, but I actually picked up the trades, and I loved it. I mean, it was like almost like a horror comic book too, and with a lot of suspense and like subterfuge
what,
and stuff like
Bruce
that.
Jones's niche was too horror.
Yeah. Oh, it was great.
That's why he had a rough time with Checkmate.
Chris, if you haven't read those, I would recommend them if they're on Comixology.
Yeah,
it starts with the second volume of Hulk, or Incredible Hulk, at number 34.
Mm. I've heard of it. You know, I've heard his name associated with
mm-hmm.
Hulk.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, I would second your guess on it. I liked it a lot. I know I had a lot of friends that didn't, but I liked it.
Yeah, it was different.
It got me excited again to be reading the Hulk, and I think it was because of the suspense, and because it felt like a horror book, and it was good.
Yeah, you did a good job. Yeah.
Harley's playing.
So
with
that's
your
it for questions,
your hedgehog,
huh?
Chris.
Oh. Good choice, Harley.
Yeah.
Mabel's here next to me, and then Dusty's on the other side. Everybody's showed up to podcast.
That's good. Can always rely on them.
Right, Mabel? Do you got
right.
any message for
do wanna,
Harley?
Do you want to kick off the book that you chose, Chris?
Sure. So, I think a deluxe edition of this was released recently. But so I was curious, my choice was JLA, A Midsummer's Nightmare miniseries. And I chose it because I saw that it was supposedly a lead-in of sorts to Grant Morrison's JLA, which I've read a handful of, and so that made me kind of curious about this. And I know there were a number of these like mini JLA miniseries back in the day, and I really haven't read many of them. but it was written by Mark Waid and Fabian Nicieza, penciled by Jeff Johnson and Derek Robertson. And I don't know if you guys could, I mean, I know Derek Robinson. I don't know if I know Jeff Johnson.
No,
not.
I don't.
He did the Wonder Man series back at Marvel.
Oh, okay. I remember
that. He has a very similar style to like Adam Hughes or, especially he's really good with facial expressions. So like if you look at I think he did one. Yeah, Jeff Johnson is his name, right? Yeah, he did Wonder Man.
Yeah. Could you either of you really see distinguish between the two pencilers? Because I couldn't really tell.
I couldn't tell. I almost thought, and I don't know if this is true, is that one was penciling and one was inking, but I couldn't tell they were different. And it's weird because their styles are totally different. Like, to me, I could see Jeff Johnson's artwork. Like, I could see it.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't see Derek Robbins, because he's done The Boys and he's doing Harbinger Renegade. And
I didn't realize he'd been penciling for so long.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see if he, what does it list him as in our database? Did you check it?
Mm-mm. What are you asking?
Harley's having a good time with all of her toys. yeah, they're both listed as artists, so. God, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, if I come to it, I'll point it out. There was a couple spots that I thought I saw a little Derek Robinson. I mean, yeah, did I say that right? But otherwise, I didn't really see him so much. Maybe this was early on for him.
It's also interesting about the Fabian Nicieza and Mark Waid. Maybe Fabian wrote and Derek Robinson drew, and then Mark Waid wrote and Jeff Johnson drew? I don't know.
Yeah, I can't tell.
Well, anyway, it starts off with Destiny, and he's holding a sacred tome with pages missing, and there's a Guardian of the Universe. But then we abruptly shift in the bottom panel to Kyle Rayner as an artist working on a comic book that contains the panels above. He's working on a page that contains panels. And so we have a Kyle Rayner that's a comic book creator. He's got a studio with a bunch of comics on the floor and stuff. And he actually is creating a Green Lantern comic book. So we know the things are, I mean, while Kyle Rayner is an artist, he obviously doesn't, he is the Green Lantern, not, he doesn't create a Green Lantern comic book. But further adding to the unusual nature of things, it seems as though most average people have superpowers. And as the story goes on, we'll learn that they're called sparkers. There's these kind of flashes of sudden where a whole bunch of people will suddenly gain superpowers. So we're then introduced to Clark Kent, who has long hair and a ponytail. And again, you know, he's a reporter, just as normal, but doesn't seem to be Superman. And then we meet Bruce Wayne, and Wally West in Blue Valley, who's having a dream of being the Flash. In Gateway City, Diana Prince is a schoolmaster of a Themyscira school for girls. Each of these characters that are familiar to us being introduced, and then Arthur Curry as well. And finally, it seems we're on Mars with John Johns and his Martian wife and child. All these characters are familiar to us and who are either the member or an analog, in the case of Wally and Kyle, members of the original Justice League.
And if I could just interrupt, at this time, it wasn't until the very, very end that, like you had said, I didn't realize that during this time with DC that those that wasn't the Justice League. You know what I mean? Okay. So so it didn't really I just thought it was, you know, just a mini series of the current Justice League. So at the end, it got interesting to me to learn that that wasn't the case. But sorry, I didn't mean to.
Okay. No, that's interesting because, like I said, I went into it reading it because I knew it was kind of a lead into that shift to the JLA Grant Morrison series.
Yeah.
So Wally is a school teacher, there's a kid reading a Green Lantern comic book in his class, and so he grabs it, you know, just as a reprimand for, but when he sees it and sees Green Lantern, something flashes in his mind. Meanwhile, Clark is out on the streets reporting, and there's chaos going on with super-powered people. The Daily Planet globe gets crashed into, and he has a vision of the explosion of Krypton and his rocket ship. So it jogs his memory, like the similar visual image, and he sees a couple women in danger and suddenly remembers his own abilities and saves them from getting crushed by a collapsing building. Bruce Wayne, he comes home, or his parents arrive, and it was kind of a nice play on our expectations. He says, "Mother, father, how can you be here?" Naturally, we're thinking he's surprised to see his parents alive, but it's just that he doesn't expect them to be in Gotham City. He's remained in the city, but they've gone on to live elsewhere. And Bruce Wayne has kept the Wayne Foundation, basically something that his father started as a tax shelter. He's turned into a real important charity and stuff. But when Martha gets her pearls caught on a statue, her necklace rips and the pearls hit the floor, that is the image that jogs his memory of their death. And he remembers that he's Batman. And he goes looking for the Batcave and can't find the entrance. And Alfred is wondering what he's doing. But as a confirmation of his sudden memory returning, Superman shows up. Long black hair blowing in the wind.
That's what I said on Twitter. It's very lustrous hair.
Yeah, I kind of like long hair Superman.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. At the time I thought it was fine, but like looking back now, it's like kind of jarring for a second until you get back into the story.
Well, everybody had it. Look at Arthur's hair.
Oh yeah, well it was very long hair.
Yeah. And then you have Kyle's like yuppie hair.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, there's definitely some 90s influence there.
Yeah.
So Batman and Superman are back, basically. They're the first two, somewhat appropriately. And so, you know, they have a discussion. Superman says that they need help to deal with the chaos that's resulting from all so many people having superpowers and not knowing how to deal with them and stuff. And Batman's reluctant. This is one place, like, there's spots in the story where I thought the dialogue was a little chunky. Batman says, "Always the optimist. I look at the world with a little more doubt, Superman." And, you know, Superman makes the point that they need more firepower, and Batman says, "As you know, I'm not much of a team player. You sure we can't handle this alone?" Like, if I was editing that, I think it's enough for Batman to say, "You sure we can't handle this alone?" Because it implies things that the reader... Anytime, like, you have dialogue from characters that start with "as you know," that's usually not a good sign. Because that usually means that there's some kind of exposition or something going on. It's usually pretty clunky. There was a couple spots throughout this miniseries where I thought the dialogue was clunky, but so that's how the first issue ends. I don't know if you guys want to jump in with comments so far, if you just want to wait till the end. Do you have anything you want to interject?
No, I don't have anything now. But to your point, to go back with what I was saying before, when Batman's saying that, I'm like, what is he talking? Well, he's constantly saying that he's a loner, he doesn't work with others, but he's on the freaking Justice League.
was this your first read of it?
No, I own it, but I haven't read it in 20 years, and I didn't remember where exactly it fell. Yeah.
When they resolicited it, it was like maybe 3 months ago, maybe four months. They came out with that hardcover that Chris was talking about. They said this is what led to JLA. Like, they specifically use that as a marketing, you know, to market the hardcover.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
I have never read this before. I had it. I bought it. I just never wanted to read it, I guess. I jumped trail into JLA. So it was new to me that, I don't know, it's kind of jarring for the same reason, because you're reading it out of context. You're like, why don't they know each other? Why aren't they? You know, it's kind of weird. But I liked where Morrison took off with it more, and I really liked the Destiny thing. Like, they've played that before, like characters forgetting like who they are or what they would be like if things were normal.
Yeah,
you know, like in 52, they played around with Luther empowering individuals and making them giving them superpowers when they didn't have it, and that led into an incarnation of Infinity Inc. They've played with these things in the past. This one is like the first though, where you're kind of like empowering humanity with these powers. They call it Spark. They get the Spark event, and it's like when a mutant becomes of age, these people spark, and it kind of feels like the Inhumans TV show, sort of like when they're of age, they go into the Terrigen Mist and they come out with some power, and they could be hugely disappointed with what power they come out with, but. That's what's happening on this world, is everybody's got powers, and these superheroes don't remember who they are or why they have powers, and that why they're not sparking. Like, that's one of the things that Clark keeps wondering what's going on, and he's the first one to notice, you know?
Yeah, they kind of do it in order of, you know, Superman... Action Comics number one, and then, you know, Batman appearing in Detective Comics after that, and kind of sort of echoing that. This is also my first time reading this as well.
The Martian Manhunter one is interesting, because of all the scenarios that these guys were put into by Destiny, he was put into a place where he wanted to stay. Like,
yeah.
he did not want to leave his scenario. All the other scenarios, they weren't in their like perfect place. Even Bruce, I don't think felt he was in his perfect place, even though his family was still there. Martian Manhunter did not want to come back. Like he was the one that suffered the most from this huge ordeal.
Yeah, the second issue starts out with him with his family, and there's a little bit of an indication that things are up with him, and that he sees that his child, I'm not sure if it's a daughter or a son, has drawn the symbols of the other Justice Leaguers on a wall. Batman and Superman realize that they aren't yet at a point where they can go out as Batman and Superman safely. So they split up as Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne to try to jog the memories of other former teammates of them of them of and meanwhile, Wally is getting on a plane to track down Kyle Rayner because he knows he created this Green Lantern comic that's connected to the dreams that he's been having. So Bruce goes to Arthur Curry and basically jogs his memory by shoving his head in a fish tank, and then you see like the dawning of awareness on Arthur's face when he realizes he can breathe underwater. So that kind of contrasts with Superman's methods when he goes to talk to Diana at her school, and he just kind of shows her that he can fly, standing outside on a balcony. You know, he steps out the balcony and he invites her to join him. And once she's out there in the sky with him, they greet each other as friends. While this is going on, Wally shows up at Kyle's apartment. And so for quite a while, Kyle thinks that he's some kind of crazy comic book fan. Until finally, like, things escalate between them. And in sort of a moment of frustration, Kyle fires off a green blast, and Wally uses his powers to speed out of the way of it. So they both kind of come into awareness together. So they start meeting up. Batman brings Aquaman and Superman brings Wonder Woman, and the four meet up together. Superman is insists that they go help some people that are in danger, even though Batman is still reluctant, and thinks that it's probably just a ploy to get them to show themselves by whoever has done this to them, and also possibly given all these people powers. But you know, Superman can't pass up an opportunity to help. But it's a little dangerous for them, even though they're so powerful, just in terms of the sheer numbers of people. That's when Green Lantern and the Flash show up to help out. They kind of realize that the six of them, even though two are replacements, kind of represent 6 out of 7 of the original Justice League, and the only one that's missing then is Martian Manhunter. And as Mike alluded, it turns out that John is not on Mars, but he's actually on Roswell Air Force Base. And like Mike said, he's not happy to be taken out of this reality, even though it's not real. He's happy and be given what he wanted. But basically, there are a group of these Sparkers that end up setting a fire to the Air Force base, and you know the fire danger weakness that he has, basically against his will, he ends up having to join back up with the group. So in the final issue, I thought it was kind of neat that this is the only issue that starts with a roll call now that the team is back together. I thought that was a nice way of highlighting that. But in this issue is now that the team is back together, remember who they are. This is where they track down who's responsible. And part of the way that they're able to do that is that Kyle was channeling a lot of this stuff into the comic book that he was creating. So he has some of that knowledge. And they track down to this this kind of armored complex in Montana where they find Dr. Destiny. And there's been implications since the beginning that he was responsible for this, but it turns out that there was someone more behind this, and that's when this character called No Man, spelled KNOW, reveals himself. I thought his reveal and his character design was kind of, I don't know, a little silly, but his background was kind of interesting. You know, the league tries to deal with him a bit, and he's pretty powerful. He explains eventually that he's connected to the controllers and the Guardians, who created the Green Lantern Corps, of course, and kind of like a parallel to Hal Jordan's origin story, this spaceship crashes and this controller gives, as he's dying, he gives power to this caveman, to carry on his mission.
Did you notice the reference to Vandal? Savage?
No, but you're right that's similar. Oh, yeah, it says another was considered.
They give it to another savage.
Oh, yeah, you're right. They bold the word savage. There you go. Yeah. Nice. So that's kind of what his background is.
But a controller is kind of a big deal at this time, because if you remember, Kyle Rayner is the only Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And what happens is the controllers took over the roles of Guardians and they made the Dark Stars. The Dark Stars, and I think at this time Donna Troy was a Dark Star. So like there was several Dark Stars that were patrolling. They were assigned like Green Lanterns to have different space sectors. They were the space police of the universe at this time, because the only Green Lantern was Kyle.
Right.
So they were they had different policies, different procedures, but they were good guys. So for the most part. You could say that about the Guardians too, but they have their own, you know, their own agendas and such. But they were the space police at the time.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for filling that in, because I know like some of the pieces of that, but not how it all connected.
Yeah.
I did appreciate No Man's backstory. You know, it's kind of interesting. His motivations aren't just simple evil. And he put the Justice Leaguers in these scenarios. He wants to basically, he doesn't think that they're equipped to deal with the dangers that the planet Earth is going to face in the future. And so instead he, you know, started giving these powers to most of the people on on Earth. And so then, because they sort of argue with this philosophy, he puts all of them in this new, these new brief scenarios where basically, like, their powers are
heightened.
They're on the level of gods. I mean, Superman has no control over his powers. Wally can't slow down. Kyle is up in space looking down on everyone. Aquaman just can't block out the thoughts of all of the sea creatures. He wonders if he's the protector of the ocean or the ocean itself. And Batman's mission is never ending. And so it's John that kind of breaks out of that, is able to use Diana's lasso to get the rest out of their scenarios. And they don't really, they're not able to take down, they're not able to take down No Man. He basically says, well, it's up to you then. You can try, see what you can do, to stop these threats that are coming. It's towards the end of this issue that I see a bit more Derek Robinson, so I don't know if he stepped in to finish it, maybe. But there's some pages that look a little bit more like a earlier version of the art that I'm used to. At least in this, like, I'm reading a digital copy of the new collection through the library. And at least at the end of this, it has like a page for each one of the Justice League members and like a little write-up about them. And it made me laugh, given that the like way that he says it a couple times in the story, that Batman starts off with, Batman's always been uncomfortable as a team player. It's like, okay, I get it already. But overall I would say that it was like a 3 out of 5 for me. I found it interesting and entertaining. Oops, sorry, I just dropped my Kindle on my cat.
Oh,
sorry
boy.
About that. Sorry about that, buddy. He's like, what the hell just happened?
Cat. Now he's hungry. He wants to eat.
It's rude. Now he's yawning. He's got dragon breath. He's got stinky breath. He's like, take that, Dad. I'll knock you out. Mm-hmm. I thought it was entertaining. The art was competent in terms of storytelling and stuff, but the aesthetics of it weren't like necessarily my style. I think that the JLA series that came out of, not really came out of it, but that this sets the stage for, is better. But I don't think like Mike, you kind of said that these sort of things have happened before, so the plot didn't necessarily strike me as something I've never seen before. And like I said, there were spots where the dialogue was clunky, but then there were also other spots where I thought that it was kind of clever and interesting. So it kind of fell in the middle for me.
Mm-hmm. It's very similar to what they're doing with Justice League now, because the way he's writing it now is you have this team and they're put into all these events, but there's something bigger that they're warned about that they're the cause of. So it's almost like the current writer, which is the artist, what's his name? I can't remember his name. But he's like,
Hitch? Is it Hitch?
Yeah, Hitch. He's channeling this kind of like storyline, but it's been going on for 3 years, maybe 4, because it happened when he was writing Justice League of America before he came to the rebirth. So it's been going on for a long time, man. And I am like 3 issues behind, so I hope it's resolving soon. But
yeah, it just wrapped up, I think.
Oh, thank God.
Well, isn't he? He's leaving the book, isn't he?
Right, and Priest is coming on. So
I think it needs to be a new. he did some big stuff, and like I think some of the arcs worked really well. Like I really liked the where he had the kids on the iPads and they were controlling. the Trickster. It was the Trickster. Jesse James, his kids. There's certain sparks that I liked, but his like ongoing thread, man, it just dragged.
Yeah, it was up and down.
I thought it was gonna wrap up in the New 52, because if you remember when Rebirth happened, the Justice League of America was still coming out. Like it released three more issues after Rebirth started, because he was so slow. But I'm glad that you said it's wrapping up. Maybe I had to marshal through and just finish it, finish up what's been done.
I liked the last story arc of it with how they wrapped it up and stuff. I actually liked the last three.
Yeah, we'll three see. Four issues. I think I'm about three issues behind, so maybe we'll. But it's very similar to this, and this guy is not really, at least he doesn't consider himself a bad guy. He's like, I need to do this in order for Earth to survive. Okay, now you deal with it. You stop me, I'm not gonna shoot
you. Yep.
Yeah, it's your problem now. I tried to save the Earth by empowering all these individuals. The thing that backfired is he gave these people powers, and it sort of caused the chaos.
Well, like, yeah, they don't know how to use them.
Crime went through the roof. Everything, you know, it wasn't necessarily a good thing.
Right.
In other words, he did this without, like, maybe he should have broadcast his face to the whole world. I have granted you power! So there's a coming threat in the next few years that you will have to gather together and fight this, or you will not survive. He never broadcast it to anybody. He never told anybody his agenda, except for these seven individuals.
Right, so everyone's just doing their own thing.
Yeah.
So you're not. It's not like, you know, any good is going to come out of that.
So it wasn't really a well-thought-out plan, I don't think. Other than he gave them the power to defend themselves, I guess.
Yeah. The no man my ass.
Yeah.
You could know anything.
Shit.
I thought it was I enjoyed it for what it was. I probably, like you, Chris, I'd probably give it a 3 out of 5. You know, it had its good and bad things. But overall, you know, I definitely enjoyed going back and reading it. Like I said, I didn't know quite where in continuity we were. By memory, and but so it kind of like threw me at first. I'm like,
why are they
going on with Green Lantern? And yeah, I mean, I knew that maybe Kyle Rayner really is writing Green Lantern right now, because I knew that he was an artist. And then when that they went and got coffee, and that woman that he got coffee with just started floating in the air, and I'm like,
See, I knew immediately that this wasn't true. I hadn't read it before, but like when Kyle
was just the tone of which he was with his
deadlines and such, and you know, it was just too weird. It's like Mr. Miracle for me right now with Tom King. I know it's not real.
But you're laughing and laughing during it, apparently.
Well, you'll have to read it. It's funny.
Yeah, I didn't read number 4. Is that the funny one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially the big Barda scenes are pretty cool. They're pretty funny. But I don't know if it's supposed to. You asked me a question. You said,
yeah,
is it supposed to be funny? I don't know. I don't know what it's supposed to be. I don't know.
Me and you feel, I think generally speaking, I'm a much bigger Tom King fan than you are.
Oh, definitely.
Okay. But
I'm not afraid to say that.
I'm going to, because I mean, you liked the Vision, didn't you?
I liked the Vision. I had trouble with Omega Man.
Throughout the whole thing, or just at the beginning?
His 9 panel grids, it's like trying to be Watchmen without being Watchmen to me. I don't. he'll have like a 9-panel grid of somebody getting out of a box, and it's like he just didn't do shit in those 9 panels. Whereas in Watchmen, there was a lot of context behind those 9 panels. They meant something. I have a lot of issues with it. I see where he's going. At least I think he. God, I hope this isn't reality. I hope this is Dr. Bedlam's like mind fuck. But if it is reality, I'll be really, really torqued.
Well, here's my thoughts. I loved the vision. I thought I think that Sheriff of Babylon was great.
I haven't read
Omega
that
Men. I liked quite a bit, but I don't think it was as good as the Vision. And I enjoyed. I've been enjoying Batman, and Mike, I still enjoy Batman.
Okay, let me backtrack.
Okay.
I enjoy, and I see greatness. At least for me, this is my opinion. I see greatness in what he does in Batman, but he throws out 2 pages that I can't stand, and they take me out of the fucking story. So the greatness, the things that I like really, really, really love, I can't really love because I'm still thinking about the Dr. Seuss dialogue or the repetition.
That's where I'm starting
so
to get
thrown out. I get so thrown out of it.
I'm starting to get to the point where, especially that last issue that I read, which I think was 33, it's just too much. It's like cat bad.
And he does the same thing in Mr. Miracle. Dark Side is. Wait till you read the next one. The repetition is just like.
It's not the repetition that's bothering me with Mr. Miracle. It's that I hope that this starts going. I'm starting to get worried that he's writing these really weird just for the sake of writing them weird.
That's what it feels like to me. Forced weird. That's what it feels like.
And that's when it doesn't. I start to lose my interest in it. If you're just writing stuff just to make it weird without any type of logic behind it, you're going to lose me. And I know it's only been 3 issues. I haven't read issue 4, but
Can we chat about this for 10 minutes when you read issue 4?
Yeah, sure.
I really want to know your take on it.
Yeah, I just want to start understanding a little bit more about what's going on, because right now it just seems like it's being weird for weird's sake.
And I want Chris to read this,
and it's making me angry.
I want Chris to read it because we read Kirby Mr. Miracle together, like we did it on this show. We marshaled through every Kirby Mr. Miracle there was, and the New Gods. So I really would like to. Me and Chris think differently, and we have different backgrounds. So I really want to see what he sees when he reads this.
Uh huh.
Mr. Miracle.
Sure. Yeah.
Get on it, Chris.
I will when the trade comes out.
Yeah, I imagine what they'll do is they'll release it Volume 1 and Volume 2. And
yeah,
each one 6 issues, and then there'll be like a director's cut, 12 issue, just like the Vision sort of thing they're doing. So yeah, but let's jump to do you have any comics, Rob?
Yeah, sure. Where is it? Here it is. Okay.
Oh, my
so
rating
I'm
was
gonna
a
just...
3 out of 5. I agree with you guys totally.
Oh, you were 3 out of 5 too.
I even put that in my chart before you guys even said it.
Yeah, it was good. It was enjoyable, but it wasn't something that I absolutely loved.
I really wish there was more of the controller stuff. Like some more of his backstory and motivation, like tying it to the Dark Stars and where they were in continuity. Then I think I would have went, oh!
Yeah, that probably would have been cool.
Well, the one that I read earlier this week, and I'm just going to cover it briefly. I'm not going to go through all the beats, but I thought it was really, really a good story and just very interesting. It was Detective Comics number 496. And let me just pull that up in my database. And basically, what it is what I learned after the fact, and I kind of thought this might be the case, is it's the only official appearance of Basil Carlo on Earth One prior to Crisis, because his all his older stuff was, of course, Golden Age, and so that was retconned into being on Earth Two. This was really, really a fun story to read. It's by Michael Fleischer, and the art was by Don Newton. This also represents the first issue that I have of Detective that starts my unbroken run of Detective all the way through to present. So I started reading all the Batman. I went back and got a bunch of Batmans, and I've been reading those, and any of the detectives that I had along the way, I've been sticking those in there. But now I'll be reading Batman and Detective all the way through up until Crisis, just because there's so many that I just bought over the past like 3 or 4 years that I haven't read yet. I was kind of waiting to get like a big run. So this particular story is set on a boat. It's like a cruise ship that a director, a horror director, is having like almost like a horror con for. And what's going on is that they have a lot of different displays. They're showing older movies. They're showing new movies. And they have some stars as well. And Bruce is there. Apparently he's a horror fan. He starts talking to the director. He's a big fan of this director. And one of the big displays they have is from Basil Carlo, back when he was a big movie star. And then, before he became Clayface and started killing people. And then he was been in Arkham Asylum ever since. So that's what the background is. And then what you find out is that Clayface in the asylum ends up seeing an article in the newspaper that says that this con is going on. He becomes enraged that nobody invited him because he was the greatest old-time horror star of all time. And his nurse is there trying to get him to take some meds, and he kills the nurse. And then escapes and ends up making his way to this cruise ship. What you're also learning is that apparently this director, who also produces his own the films, he's been accused by a lot of the other stars that he's been shortchanging them on like profit deals and so forth. And once Carlo gets onto the boat, some of those people start dying, like the like one of the actresses and so on and so forth. So at the end, what ends up happening, and this is like a 40-year-old spoiler alert, is that Batman, obviously, he's investigating. He's trying to prevent some of these murders, and he does prevent some other ones. And it's very clear that it appears to be Basil Carlo dressed in his Clayface outfit. And for anyone who doesn't know, at that time, Clayface, I mean, he was like a master of disguise, right? Right, Mike? He like could make up his face and stuff like that. And he wore like a trench coat.
He's my favorite Clayface.
Yeah. So he wasn't like a mud monster like the current Clayface by any means. He was a regular human being. So Batman ends up figuring it out and runs back to chase after Carlo, and they get to the basically one of the displays there was Basil Carlo's full like replicated dressing room in one of the areas, and he goes there and kind of tackles who he thinks is Clayface. And it turns out, of course, it was the director that was actually using the fact that that Bezzacarlo came on board to kill these people so he wouldn't have to pay them. They were going to sue him, and he wouldn't have to pay them all the money that he owed. And Batman opens the closet door, and Bezzacarlo falls out dead. So as soon as he got to the cruise ship, that director had killed him and then took his place. And the way he was able to realize it is that is the type of makeup that when he was fighting Clayface, the makeup washed off in the water when he jumped into the pool. And so he knew it must be a new water soluble makeup, whereas Bezzacarlo only used the old-time makeup, which he had to use cold cream for. And so that's how he knew that it wasn't really the actual Two-Face. So I thought it was interesting that this is like a one and done. Like he just shows up and then he dies off panel. And if you're not paying attention, you don't even know that he dies until the very end of the book. So I thought it was really interesting that they had somebody who, you know, people, comic book fans still know, you know, who he is today. And is that, Mike, is that the Clayface right now in Detective Comics? It is, right?
Yeah, because it's just a very younger version of him.
Right. So, I mean, he's even the Clayface of today. And,
yeah, because he was for an him actor. To just,
yeah. So, you know, for him to just show up in this issue and immediately be killed off screen, or off panel, I should say, was pretty interesting. But it definitely was a very, very fun story to read. And just having that little extra history in there was really cool as well. I really enjoyed that. Cool. I definitely recommend people to pick that one up if they have the ability to.
Might be available digitally too. Who knows?
Yeah, it might be. It's not an expensive book anyhow, but it was really good.
Well, I'm gonna talk about Captain Marvel Volume 1. Okay, so. All right. I don't know shit about Captain Marvel. I know about Miss Marvel. I know about Carol Danvers. I know about some of the guys that Peter, I think it's Peter David, wrote about after his death that mm-hmm. had the mantle of Captain Marvel.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I never knew Captain Marvel. Okay, so recently I decided to read The Life and Death of Captain Marvel. And it was good enough that I wanted to read more. It didn't have an impact on me, I think, because of when I read it. Like,
yeah,
this was probably a big deal back in the day to have a superhero pass away and die of cancer.
And Mike, I think it's so weird that you and I read this in the space of, I think it was like 2 days. Like, I read it one day, you read it and like the very next day, or vice versa. Just independently of each other.
Yeah, I think we were a couple weeks off of each other.
Oh, was it? And but that was weird. It was might like, have been, oh my God.
I don't know what the hell led me to read this. I had bought it, but I read it digitally. I read I think my version is like a volume 3 or something. You know how they had like multiple printings of it?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a first printing of that I own. It's like third print.
Yeah, though I only have it digitally. It was like on sale one of those times for like 99 cents. So I'm like,
yeah, I think
I've never read it before. I'll try it out.
It could have been a subliminal message from one of your posts. I don't know.
yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what led me to read it. I can't remember. Like I know what's led me to read other things, but what it did is it made me interested. Like through this whole issue that he's dying, he's kind of like reminiscing about his past, and there was little things about like, okay, there was a Kree guy that was trying to kill him, and he was in love with the same woman that he was, and there was little threads in there that I was like, oh, that's interesting. I want to see where that goes, and it led me to read the first volume of Captain Marvel, which I've never thought of reading before. And I think it started off, I didn't even start where it began. I think it started off in a Marvel Superheroes Presents or something like that. And then it continued with Captain Marvel. I didn't go read the Marvel Comics Presents or whatever it was called. Marvel Superheroes, I think that's what it was called. Marvel
I think you're Superheroes. Right, yeah.
But I never went back and read it. But I started with issue one, and issue one is kind of like a big fight scene, but with him in a set like a sentry, which is a Kree sentry, and the sentry wants is like marching to destroy Earth. And what happens is the guy that's in love with his girlfriend set upon the sentry and programmed it to do destruction, and he's there as a spy. That's what's so interesting to me. Is he's put on this planet to like spy on Earth as a Kree soldier with no heroic incentives other than to they could potentially attack it at some point. And he's there to learn about it. And he ends up being a hero in stopping this sentry. And it's pretty cool because the sentry, the intelligence, the supreme intelligence?
Yeah,
it actually runs the Kree. But they have these huge robots, and they're kind of like, they look like Celestials, sort of, but they're a lot smaller. But they're cool because they can, like, reprogram themselves. They, like, if you punch a hole in them, have you ever seen, maybe it's the Hellboy 2, the Hellboy 2 movie, where they had these robotic, this army, the Golden Army. well, if you punched a Golden Army soldier, they could repair themselves. That's what these guys are like. They can repair themselves. So it was a cool fight scene. They introduce Carol Danvers. She's in charge of security at the Cape Canaveral. And he has an alias. The other thing that's cool is he has to take a pill every hour just to breathe the atmosphere. I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to lose my voice here because I'm talking so much. But in the second issue, in the third issue, it's really cool because the Skrulls start getting an interest. They're like, why are the Kree on Earth? What are they doing? Oh, hell, we're going to send the Super Skrull down there to find out. And we want him to capture Marvel and just find out what's going on. So his whole goal is there. And then the Skrull has a love interest with the Emperor's daughter. So, like, the Emperor promised him, if you succeed in this mission, you will get to have anything of your choice. Well, he's going to ask for his daughter's hand in marriage. And she hates him, by the way. So that's also fascinating. So the Super Skrull comes down there in... For the most part, Captain Marvel is outnumbered because he's fighting the Fantastic Four. And it's a pretty rough situation to be in. But he does find a way to escape and turn the tides of it. Because at this time, the Super Skrull not only had the powers of the Fantastic Four, but he had the ability to hypnotize people. And they reference an issue of Fantastic Four for that. So he could... like hypnotize people. Well, Captain Marvel uses like a reflective service to make him hypnotize himself, and then commands him to go out into space in the middle of nowhere, and that's kind of how he wins the day over the course of three issues. But it's really fascinating because the orbiting Earth is this other Kree soldier who just hates Marvel, and his whole intent is to kill him so he could have his love interest. Mm-hmm. And that's what was exposed in the life and death of Captain Marvel that I was so interested in. And that's why I'm enjoying this series so much.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a real surprise. I thought because of the time period and the density of it and the way the stories were told at that time that I wouldn't enjoy it as much. And I really, really got into it. I like the fact that they have Carol Danvers there immediately, like as a security site rep, you know?
Yeah, I think that's interesting for sure. Mm-hmm. Especially what
and
you
I,
know
I,
now.
I love, yeah. You know how the Kree and the Skrulls hate each other? I like the political things of that nature, that they're using the Earth as like a little bit of a battleground.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
That's cool.
So, Chris, you got anything else?
Yeah, I got one other thing I read to talk about. I read the first issue of The Atlantis Chronicles, Aquaman, is not in it, but it's in this issue anyways. I don't know if he shows up later. This came out in a deluxe edition recently as well. It's a 7-issue miniseries and written by Peter David with art by Esteban Morato. I did not even know that this existed prior to checking this out.
I've never heard of it, yeah.
But apparently some of the things that are established...
Peter David before he got Aquaman.
Right, yeah. Apparently some of the stuff that takes place in here as far as constructing the history of Atlantis and stuff is carried over into his run. So this first issue, I don't know if they're all this long, but this first issue is actually pretty long. I think I want to say like 50 pages or so. So I'll try to take a kind of macro view of it. There's a lot that happens, but essentially it concerns the sort of framing device and the tie-in with the name The Atlantis Chronicles is that there's an older scholar called Albert who is asked by the king of Atlantis, who's a dark-haired man named Orin, to be the first chronicler of writing the Atlantis Chronicles, the history of Atlantis and the capital city Poseidonis, which is where the story takes place. And so throughout the issue, there are captions that are from Albert writing these chronicles. And he talks about how he's sort of an interesting choice because he's known to be more of a supporter of the king's brother. his brother Shilako is blonde haired, and he is a priest and more of a mystical magic believer, whereas Orin is about technology, and so it's that kind of old conflict. They get along, at least in the start of the story, but they have different backgrounds and beliefs. The other kind of main character is Rajar, who is kind of like Orin's right-hand man and also someone who predicts a lot of calamities and has visions and stuff, but none of them ever come true. Or it's because they're all concerned with the far, far future, so time hasn't caught up with his predictions. And Rajar kind of warns him against his decision to choose a chronicler that favors his brother. But Orin's not real concerned. But then he's taking a bath, and there's like female attendants, and one of them gets speared through the back. And they're attacked by a nearby civilization. Basically, Orin, believing in the best, gave technology to this other tribe outside of Atlantis, and believing that it would help them in their like farming and hunting, and believing the best in them, but not realizing that it would make them hunger for more from Atlantis, knowing Atlantis has more than they've been given. So they try to fend off the attack, and Orin, I want to keep on saying Orin, because there's like, I thought it was kind of interesting that it's concerns two brothers, and you have the king with the dark hair and the brother with blonde hair, and it kind of makes, I think it might be an intentional like allusion to Ocean Master and Aquaman.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah, so, but Orin, like, he forbids his brother Shilako from using magic to combat this the tribes that are attacking. He just wants to, you know, use his technology. And but against his wishes, Shilako calls upon his goddess for intervention, and Sula is the name of his goddess, and she answers his prayers with lightning attacks and stuff. And his brother is upset, but it does save them. So eventually, Orin has the idea to build a dome over Atlantis as a way to out of pumice stone, as a way to protect the city. And Shilako is opposed to the idea because Shusula is the goddess of the sky. So it's basically kind of like they're putting a barrier between them and his goddess. So this is kind of really a turning point between the two brothers. It's just a step too far for Shilako. And he is upset by everything that's happening, despite the fact that he has, I think, anywhere from 10 to 14 wives, whereas Orin only has one wife, Narmia, and Shilako has many children, and Orin and Narmia have not been able to have a child. So time passes, the dome is eventually built, and Narmia ends up finally becoming pregnant. But as this, all this good stuff seems to be happening, at least for Orin, there is a meteor that's on the way and seems to be directed towards Poseidonis. The leader of the tribe that attacked earlier comes to apologize, basically, and seeing that the dome that they built, they basically seem to humble themselves and say, you know, we are sorry for attacking, and we want to be trusted. So Orin says, you know, I'll give you a chance, leave in peace and let me think about it, and I'll see if you are telling the truth. Well, meanwhile, Shilako, who is opposed to this leniency and this whole idea, he calls out to Sula, and she doesn't respond, and he thinks she's angry because of the dome and all of that, so he calls upon the dark gods instead, and dark gods answer and start killing the tribesmen. So the king's wife eventually gives birth, and there's a party to celebrate the birth of the king's child. But at the party, these earthquakes start to happen, and the Raja, the king's right hand, tells him that the meteor that is on its way is headed right for them, is getting closer. So there's a lot of panic about the arrival of the meteor, and Shilako's trying to do different mystical things to divert it, while the king and Raja start trying to come up with a technological solution to protect the city. ultimately what they come up with is a laser that can shoot the meteor out of the sky, but they have to situate the laser in the territory of the tribes. Well, as far as they know, the tribes are on good terms with them now, because they don't know that Shalako called upon the dark gods to kill them, to some of them. And so Narmia, Rajar is sent to meet with the tribes. And eventually, you know, they're delayed in coming back, and the king starts to get worried, and they something alerts them to go outside, and all Rajar and all the men that he sent, their heads are on pikes because of what the Shalako did to the tribes. So Orin, not knowing that they were retaliating, he sends forces out to basically murder the rest of the tribes and take the land to put the laser in position. They fire on the meteor. But it stays in place, in place of the sun, and eventually strikes down on them. They're unsuccessful, and it crashes down on the dome. Starts creating chaos. The ocean goes wild, and Atlantis sinks. So, yeah, that was 43 pages, just on issue one. So, but it was, I actually really liked it a lot. Maybe because I kind of liked that it was, you know, not really superheroes, which I'm not super in the mood for at the moment. And the art was really good. It definitely has like sword and sorcery kind of feel to it. So it reminds me more of like Conan or Arian or Warlord or something like that.
It's like a European feel to it, I think.
Yeah, yeah, it does. So yeah, it's really good art and really, really well written. Like I didn't really like highlight them, but I did mention that there was various captions taken from the Chronicles themselves, and I thought it was interesting. It's not the author's voice not unbiased description, but it's definitely a character narrating, and he does show his bias, but he's not really aware of his bias. He even like calls himself unbiased at one point. So I thought it was really well written as well. So it's a nice discovery. I think I'll try to continue and read the rest of it.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So it seems like, I don't know how the other six issues will be, but if they're as good, it's be a recommended pickup, trade, or whatever.
It's probably a good book to read in your mood that you're in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's more true. Like a historical telling of what Atlantis was before we know in continuity in the superhero world.
Yeah. It's like a fictional history.
It does set up a lot. Like, there's a lot of references to this thing in Peter David's run.
Mm.
And he'll flat out tell you. Like, in some of them, he'll have an asterisk there, but it's deeper than that, because there's a lot of magic and stuff involved.
Cool.
And references to characters that are in that book.
Nice.
Cool.
What else you got, Rob?
I'm just going to, again, this is just going to be very quick overview, because I just mentioned this to you guys on Twitter a couple of days ago, that after we had our Halloween episode last time, about 3 or 4 days ago, I went ahead and watched Prom Night 2. I happened to notice that the rating on IMDb was actually higher than the original Prom Night. And it seemed, and it looked just a little that, not even a trailer or anything like that, but just it seemed like it was more of a, a classic like 80s type horror movie, and it definitely was. It was actually very enjoyable. It starts out set in 1957, and this particular girl, Mary Lou, and she's going to be prom queen, and but you can tell that she's got kind of an attitude, and she's kind of like stuck up, and she's going out with a guy, and he gives her a ring with her initials on it, and then literally 2 seconds later, this is at the party, at the prom. She asks him to go get some punch. So she, while he goes out and gets punch, she grabs another guy and sneaks backstage, and the two of them start making out. And the guy, you know, the original boyfriend, comes and sees this, and, you know, obviously starts getting really upset, and ends up, he's trying to use what they were going to do, I think they were going to use a stink bomb, like just at the prom itself. But what he decides to do is sneak up on the catwalk, and when she's crowned, he's gonna go ahead and drop it on her. So he does, but what happens is the fuse actually ignites her dress, and she burns to death right on the stage.
Ouch.
Yeah, so that's how it starts. That's like the first 10 minutes of the movie.
And so that's the revenge of that.
That's it. And then it's set 30 years later in 1987. And basically what happens is it's, you know, this main girl, her name's Vicky, and, you know, there's a bunch of other girls that the one is, I think, there's like three or four of them all like rivaling, trying to be the prom queen. Like they're, you know, the whole class can vote on it and stuff. And so they're jockeying for votes. What ends up happening is, you know, Vicky starts, she actually goes to this, down to the basement of the school, and they still have some old stuff from 1957 and stuff like that. And basically what happens is Mary Lou's spirit basically takes over her, Vicky's body, and, you know, starts killing her rivals, you know, one by one. And, until the end where, it's actually at the prom, and she's gonna be crowned the prom queen, and she actually literally opens like the Vicky's body like opens up, and she actually like comes through her body, and it was everyone's freaking out and stuff, and these two guys, the original boyfriend and the one that she was fooling around with, and I can't remember which one was which, but one became the principal of the school and the other one became a priest. And so I think the boyfriend was the principal, and I think the guy who was fooling around with actually became the priest. But she ends up killing the priest. And so what happens is as everyone's going crazy and stuff, he thinks, you know, well, she's basically come back because she was never able to enjoy being prom queen, and actually like crowns her, like, you know, puts the actual crown on her head, and that basically like settles her spirit, and then she just like disappears. And then Vicky actually, even though it appeared like she came out of Vicky's body, you know, Vicky actually ends up being okay, that she didn't literally come out of her body. It was more like a, you know, like an effect. So this was pretty interesting, and it was very very fun to watch. It was a lot better than the first prom night. So if you guys have a chance, check it out. It had more like a, when you think of those 80s type horror movies, this is like right down the middle, but it was really, really good. I really had fun watching it.
Cool. I wouldn't have expected that. Usually, you know, sequels a lot of times, especially with horror movies.
Yeah, Yeah, it was fun. It was just a lot of fun to watch. It had, you know, the kind of like scary parts and stuff, but overall, I mean, it was kind of silly, but it was just really cool. It was so much better done than the first one. But yeah, that's it. I just wanted to mention it without going, you know, scene by scene. It was something that was very enjoyable.
Cool. Yeah.
I only have one other thing to mention. Sure. I'm reading The Punisher Suicide Run. Have you guys ever read that?
No, I have not.
It's pretty freaking entertaining. Back when it came out, I only read part of it because I didn't buy all of the Punisher titles. I only bought the proper. So like I missed every, and it's one of those series that you have to read the whole thing to get the context of everything that's going on. Like it's continued in the next issue, and it crosses over Warzone, War Journal, and Punisher. And I read 24 and 25 of Warzone, 87 of Punisher, and 63 of War Journal. And this is the part. It's an interesting title because it has like all of Punisher's history in it. It's got Micro, it's got the two cops that assumed the Punisher role. It's got like all the gang, a lot of the gangsters that he's dealt with. He comes across a situation where he can kill everybody at once, and he's willing to sacrifice himself to do it, like take down the whole building, and he takes that opportunity. And then there's another organization called Virgil, I think it's called that, and they're hunting down the Punisher at the same time. So when the building drops and they kill everybody, he dresses another person in the costume of the Punisher, so they think the Punisher's dead. But he's broken, like he had a lot of the building dropped on him, and he needs time to heal. And he runs across a little girl, and the little girl kind of starts helping him. And they use the word retarded in here, which isn't a good word to use. But she always says, "No, I'm special." But she doesn't seem like she seems like she's got all her ducks in a row. And when she's helping him, she actually seems smarter than her dad to me. But he gets arrested. He gets put into a cell because her father is a cop, and she finds him in her room, and he arrests him, not knowing who he is. And this guy Blackwell knows who he is, and he finds out that when they fingerprint him that he's still alive, and this guy's lost his shit. Like he's killing his own people because he wants to kill the Punisher so bad. Like he's rotten to the core. And this guy's head of that the Virgil group, and he's leading he's blowing up stuff, killing innocents. He doesn't even care anymore. His whole goal is just to kill the Punisher. And then all the mafia guys, when the fingerprints get routed to the FBI, the FBI knows, and they're all driving to this town, and it's a small town in New York, somewhere off the outskirts. And all these people are going, and it's going to be an apocalypse. And that's kind of like where I'm at. Like, it's so fun. Like, I'm going to finish reading the whole damn thing as soon as we're off, because I'm close to finishing it.
Wow.
And want to finish it before the weekend.
You have been in quite a Marvel mood for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why, but I guess what I'm seeing is that, I don't know, maybe continuity means something more to me at this point in time, and in DC I don't feel it. Like when I read Batgirl, she seems different than when she's in Batgirl Birds of Prey. When I read Batman, it's very different than Detective or Batman All-Star Comics. It's like their own books. But when I read like X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue, they tie in together, they move together, and then Jean Grey moves with the X-Men Blue. So it's like, I maybe I'm more attached to like things being things mattering within each other's books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because
I don't know how to explain it, but
it's been probably a long period of time for you to be in that Marvel mode, wouldn't you say?
Oh, unprecedented amount of time. It's been
yeah.
5 to 6 months, and I don't see it changing.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
So that means we can't expect any DC Weekly reads anytime soon.
It'd be like a DC Spotlight, maybe. Like I enjoyed Birds of Prey because this last storyline has me excited because it's like Why the Last Man in Gotham City. I like it. I like the whole premise of it.
Yeah.
But I find that like my mind. Here's my state of mind right now is like I'm a mood reader, and then I'm like, okay, so I'm not in the mood to read DC, but I feel like I'm falling so far behind that I should read it. And then when I go read it, I immediately go back and pull up a Marvel comic because I don't want to read it. I don't want to read that. Like,
but that goes I'll back get started to how you
and
read
I, yeah, I get started read. On it and I don't get into the mode. I don't get That's into the mood. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like you said, you're always a mood reader. So to feel like you should like, let's read a DC one because I should read one. Well, yeah. You're already not in the mood to read it, you know?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'll be able to say, remember back when Mike was a big DC fan?
Yeah.
I don't think that will change, though.
I'm still buying everything. Like, there's not one comic I don't
buy. Of course
you
are.
Well, I know, but you're not reading
it. I'm sure
anything.
I'll flip back at some point.
Yeah.
It's just like right now, right now at this point in my reading, I want to read Marvel first, Independent second, and DC last.
Wow.
You're gonna end up with a section.
I guess I could blame Tom King. He's dissing me from the DC universe.
Oh man.
Yeah. Wow. Did you hear that, Daryl? Tom King has pushed Mike Myers, Mr. DC, away from DC Comics. Something that I didn't think anyone could do.
I don't know why I'm up to date on his books because I should be pushing. I should be pushing those aside. Maybe that's why.
I don't know. Maybe
it's because I go and pick up Batman, and then I hear those words over and over, and I got to go read a Marvel book and get the bad taste out of my mouth.
Right.
That's kind
and they're,
of a bizarre
they're
choice.
Good because like I enjoyed the last Batman like a lot. Like I don't know if you read it yet, but
I haven't read 34 yet.
I started off like, oh my god, not again. Oh, like. Here's this Dr. Seuss thing again. And then I got really into the story, especially the Talia stuff, and I was like, oh, yeah, I'm into it. So I don't, like, always not – I don't hate it. I just – it takes something that, like, from really enjoying it, like a 4 out of 5 or a 5 out of 5 to being a 3 out of 5 just because something's in there that takes me out. And my mind circles around it, and I can't get away from it. And it's hard. It's hard to explain.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I guess you
I
could
mean,
explain
to some extent,
it.
I get it.
I guess the closest thing I could describe is, like, if you were reading a story, and you were liking the story, but you really didn't like the art.
Yeah.
Except for me, it's like, I think the art's fantastic. I think the story's good. It's the dialogue for me that just takes me out.
Yeah.
So I that's the only thing I could think of that's close to it. It's like if you're reading something you're really enjoying and then but the art is turning you off, that's kind of like what the dialogue does to me.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
He has not even spoken a full sentence since the book started, I don't think. He talks in grunts and bat and cat and I'm gonna break your back and in repetition where he says it over and over again. I'm gonna break your back.
Yeah.
True, true, false, false. I like. Oh, you'll know what I'm talking about when you read Mr. Miracle.
Oh, it's too bad.
But it's good too though, because you're a perfect example of what happened. You came from a state where all you wanted to do was read Marvel, and now you're enjoying DC.
Big time.
You weren't even buying DC in New 52.
I was buying Batman only.
That was it.
That was it for.
Now you're buying like 80% of the titles at least.
I'm buying everything that's in the main universe. The only thing I don't buy, Mike, is that is like some of the. I don't always buy some of the non-main
like Ragman.
Minis. Like what?
Ragman and Black Lightning.
No, I'll get all those. I don't get like I am getting Wonder Woman, Conan, but that would be an example of something that I wouldn't necessarily have to buy.
Yeah, like Shadow Batman.
Yeah, and I got that too because it seemed interesting. But some of the other ones I haven't got. I don't get the DC. What is it? Something Garage.
Oh yeah, the stuff that's tied to video games or statues.
Yeah, or the bombshells. Like, I don't buy that stuff, but yeah. Everything else I'm buying. So, like, I'm buying all those bundles. Basically, yeah. I'm buying the bundles plus like miniseries. So yeah, I'm enjoying it all. And I was thinking the other day, I'm like, if they just stop doing the bundle, because this has been it's been crazy. They've been doing a bundle for a year and a half now for these. If they stop doing the bundle, I'm hard pressed to say that there's one book that is just not worth me reading. There are some that maybe I didn't enjoy as much originally, like Blue Beetle.
They're growing on you a little bit.
Yeah, but now I'm enjoying them more. Even Supergirl, since the new artist came on board, I'm actually enjoying this story so far. So that was probably my least favorite of the series, but I'm even enjoying that. So I couldn't say that even if they didn't do a bundle, I probably would still be picking them all up right now.
Yep.
Which is crazy for me. I've never done that before.
Yep. See. So you're. It's affecting you the opposite.
Yeah.
So like.
But you know that I didn't like New 52 very much. So to me, it's like I'm going overboard the other direction because it's like I loved Rebirth so much. One shot.
But like I read like Batgirl, and in one issue she's like helping find a cat and a dog, and then the next issue she's fighting a pool monster, and like I don't know, it just feels different. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the tone of it is I don't know how to describe it. It's not bad. I don't get angry because it's different and bad. It just doesn't feel like the story builds on anything, like it means mm-hmm. anything.
Have That's you been ca- caught up on reading Metal or no?
No, I'm behind.
Yeah,
and that I was enjoying. So
yeah, those one shots are really interesting.
Yeah,
the Wonder Woman one is good.
I had every intent of getting caught up on that this weekend, and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
Well, and I tell you right now, it's not going to happen the rest of the day because I want to finish The Punisher. I want to finish that, and Barb has to have her table back. So
yeah,
I have to scan in all the books that came in really early for me, and I never had expected to arrive on a Friday. I don't ever in the history. I've been with them since like 2006. Never got a shipment on a Friday.
That's cool. So are they closer to you than they were before?
I don't think like, so. I physically? Think the distance is the same. I don't know how it got here. I think it's an exception to the rule. I think next mm-hmm. week's will arrive when it usually does.
I used to get mine almost every time on Friday. And of course I haven't been doing it that long, but you know, a year and a half or so. And, but now it seems like it's normally Saturdays unless they're really delayed, and then it's Tuesday because for some reason FedEx doesn't deliver on Monday in this area.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be the Marvel Unlimited too, reading in the middle of the night. Like it could mm-hmm. be that I read something and then it triggers, hey, I want to get caught up in the X-Men this weekend. Even back issue purchases are crazy now because I'm not buying any DC. I bought... I bought maybe seven detectives over this past order, but everything else was Marvel.
That's crazy.
And one set of Image, because I wanted a complete Winona Earp, because I love the TV show, so I wanted to read where it came from.
You know what's funny? I think I've said this before, but Gotham by Geeks as the podcast had totally, like, after I first started listening, like, you know, your first couple episodes, totally flipped me for back issues.
Yeah.
I never bought DC back issues, ever, ever. And then all of a sudden, nonstop, Batman, Detective, Flash. And then when I got pretty much what I wanted to get there, I just constantly am finding DC back issues to buy. It's like totally flipped me. And I think it was the combination of the podcast, that podcast, and Rebirth that got me interested in DC as a whole. But then to listen to you guys talk about, like, just different Batman issues and stuff, I'm like, oh my God, I remember that. Oh my God, I remember, you know, being a kid and reading that. And it just totally got me back into, okay, I need to fill these gaps.
Yeah, that's when it's good to be excited about listening to stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I was listening to the latest Nerdy Legion, and he was talking about the new Legacy Captain America. Made me wanted to read that. Like,
yeah.
I want to read that now.
It's funny, because I listened to it, too, and that's when I asked you about the Epic collections.
Yeah, Mark Grenfell.
I mean, there's no reason. Yeah, there's no reason I can't just get those comic books out of a long box.
That was my Captain America was
me too.
Grenwald.
Big time.
There's a formula that these writers used to do back in the day that I'm really attracted to, and it's like have three plot lines going on at the same time at different points in time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's amazing because it keeps you hooked.
It keeps you going, and it feels like one long story.
Yeah, one is ending, the other one's in the middle, and one's starting. And it just moves along on every issue like that. And
yep.
And what it does, especially when you're reading a comic book, like just 22 pages or 20 pages, is it hooks you. I mean, it's like you want to get to the conclusion of the middle story, and then you want to see what happens from the beginning. And then they're starting another thread, and it's just like it's highly, highly addictive, and it makes you not want to stop. And and Grenwald was the master of that. DeFalco's another one that does it. Like, I've been reading a lot of Thor. I maybe that's what jaded my seeing the Thor movie is. Maybe I shouldn't have started to read a ton of Thor. I read so much Thor that I went into the movie and I'm like, yeah, that's cool. But I don't know. I was expecting more.
We're going to go see it on Wednesday night. We've already made plans.
The kids going?
No.
Are they still too young?
Yeah, you know, I mean, maybe they'd like it, maybe they wouldn't. But I'll wait until they get a little older to see some of those.
My brother took his kids, and my nephew is like getting ready to go, like he's close to five, but he sat through it, and my brother said, what's your favorite scene? And he said, when Hulk was in the tub. And he keeps talking about that scene, but I think it's freaking hilarious.
That's funny. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I hope that I like it. You know, I heard that you didn't. I've heard a lot of mixed reviews.
I didn't hate it.
No, I know.
It's just my least favorite. I enjoyed myself. I think what I, if you read Simonson Thor and then you read DeFalco Thor, and you'll see like a lot of homage to Kirby and all of this. And I think I appreciate that, but I didn't like that it was a comedy that I found was not funny.
Yeah.
Like, it's different. When I watched Guardians, I laughed. Like, I laughed at the jokes. And this one, I didn't laugh. So it's like watching a comedy where it's cute, but it's not funny.
Right. We'll see in a few days. And then I want to go see Murder on the Orient Express, so we'll see that.
I wanted to see that, but Barb doesn't want to, and then it didn't get Rotten Tomato, good Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, I want to check it out. I like those Agatha Christie ones, so.
And Chris doesn't even go to the movies anymore.
Is that true, Chris?
I don't go that often. Never did, really.
Yeah. I used to go all the time, but now with kids, we...
That's because you live in a town where people want to throw you the finger at every light.
Jesus Christ. City of good neighbors, my ass. What the hell? City of assholes, I guess.
Well, I gotta get going, guys.
All right. All right, so, we'll wrap up here. You can reach Chris at @MythMcKinneyDC, me at Mike Myers Brunch, and Rob Krieger at Rob Krieger on Twitter and geekbrunchpodcast.com. That's our website. And look at the Facebooks at Geek Brunch Podcast. When you read Mr. Miracle, come talk to me. All right.
I will.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. See ya. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.